seemed that he had suddenly grown several feet taller and much more powerful. The knife broke away and shuddered into the door, a mere shadow's depth from Trumon's ear. "Early in the morning," said Golda pleasantly. "My dear lad, you will need to stay up all night." "Have a bit more table," said Rincewind.
"No, thanks, I don't like marzipan," said Twoflower. "Anyway, I'm sure it's not right to eat other people's furniture."
"Don't worry," said Swires. "The old witch hasn't been seen for years. They say she was done up good and proper by a couple of young tearaways."
"Kids of today," commented Rincewind.
"I blame the parents," said Twoflower.
Once you had made the necessary mental adjustments, the gingerbread cottage was quite a pleasant place. Residual magic kept it standing, and it was shunned by such local wild animals who hadn't already died of terminal tooth decay. A bright fire of licorice logs burned rather messily in the fireplace. Rincewind had tried gathering wood outside, but had given up. It's hard to burn wood that talks to you. He belched.
"This isn't very healthy," he said. "I mean, why sweets? Why not crisp bread and cheese? Or salami? Now, I could do with a nice salami sofa."
"Search me," said Swires. "Old Granny Whitlow just did sweets. You should have seen her meringues."
"I have," said Rincewind. "I looked at the mattresses."
"Gingerbread is more traditional," said Twoflower.
"What, for mattresses?"
"Don't be silly," said Twoflower, reasonably. "Whoever heard of a gingerbread mattress?"
Rincewind grunted. He was thinking of food, more accurately, of food in Ankh-Morpork. Funny how the old place seemed more attractive the further he got away from it. He only had to close his eyes to picture in dribbling detail the food stalls of 100 different cultures in the marketplaces. You could eat squishy or shark's fin soup, so fresh that swimmers wouldn't go near it. And,
"Do you think I could buy this place?" said Twoflower.
Rincewind hesitated. He'd found it always paid to think very carefully before answering Twoflower's more surprising questions.
"What for?" he said cautiously.
"Well, it just reeks of ambience."
"Oh."
"What's ambience?"
said Swires, sniffing cautiously and wearing the kind of expression that said he hadn't done it, whatever it was.
"I think it's a kind of frog," said Rincewind. "Anyway, you can't buy this place because there isn't anyone to buy it from."
"I think I could probably arrange that on behalf of the Forest Council, of course,"
interrupted Swires, trying to avoid Rincewind's glare.
"And anyway, you couldn't take it with you. I mean, you could hardly pack it in the luggage, could you?"
Rincewind indicated the luggage, which was lying by the fire and managing in some quite impossible way to look like a contented but alert tiger, and then looked back at Twoflower. His face fell.
"Could you?" he repeated.
He had never quite come to terms with the fact that the inside of the luggage didn't seem to inhabit quite the same world as the outside. Of course, this was simply a byproduct of its essential weirdness, but it was disconcerting to see Twoflower fill it full of dirty shirts and old socks, and then open the lid again on a pile of nice crisp laundry smelling faintly of lavender. Twoflower also bought a lot of quaint native artifacts, or, as Rincewind would put it, junk. And even a 7-foot ceremonial pig-tickling pole seemed to fit inside quite easily without sticking out anywhere.
"I don't know," said Twoflower. "You're a wizard. You know about these things."
"Yes, well, of course, but baggage magic is a highly specialised art," said Rincewind. "Anyway, I'm sure the gnomes wouldn't really want to sell it. He groped through what he knew of Twoflower's mad vocabulary. It's a tourist attraction."
"What's that?"
said Swires interestedly.
"It means that lots of people like him will come and look at it," said Rincewind.
"Why?"
"Because," Rincewind groped for words, "it's quaint, oldie-worldy, folkloresque. It's a delightful example of a vanished folk art steeped in the traditions of an age long gone."
"It is?"
said Swires, looking at the cottage in bewilderment.
"Yes."
"All that?"
"Afraid so."
"I'll help you pack."
And the night wears on, under a blanket of lowering clouds which covers most of the disk, which is fortuitous because when it clears and the astrologers get a good view of the sky, they are going to get angry and upset.